Blog Talk Radio.
Now that the week of commemorations paying tribute to the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington has ended, where is America headed in its fight for freedom and justice for all? President Obama spoke yesterday at the site of Dr. King's I Have a Dream speech. But has their twin message of equality and activism made its way to the boardrooms, offices, and factory floors across America? Is racial diversity working on your job, or has it lost its potency in the wake of name changes and add-ons, including words like inclusion? We'll look at the landscape of the American workplace with veteran diversity professional and immediate past chair of the National Black MBA Association, William Wells Jr., and we'll determine the necessity and the necessary steps companies, human resource professionals, and business leaders should take to keep the effectiveness of diversity in place for generations to come. This is a special show. This is Carol Copeland-Thomas, and we thank you for listening to Focus on Empowerment. Hi, this is Carol Copeland-Thomas. Thank you so much for joining our show. It's been a very busy summer, from vacations to conferences that have taken place. And clearly the last week has been a real celebration of the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington. It's very important and symbolic, and we're going to talk to our guests in just a few minutes about not only its meaning from a historic perspective, but more importantly, where are we now in terms of jobs, where people are working, what they're doing, what they want to do, and can we say that diversity has really taken hold in our society, in our organizations, when we look at the numbers and we look at where people are placed, who is in a leadership role, and the jobs that have been created as a result of diversity, leadership, and multiculturalism in our demographically different society that we live in. What I'm going to do now is I'm going to play a clip. This is a clip I played last week, and it is, again, we are all familiar with Dr. King's I Have a Dream speech and the blank check, and the check was marked insufficient funds and the symbolism that was there. I would encourage you to go online and listen to Barack Obama's speech from yesterday. I'm probably going to put that on my website as well. Listen to that so you can see the importance, the relevance, the tie-in with what he was saying yesterday and the message of 50 years ago. But I want to play now a three-minute clip from Josephine Baker. I played that last week. She was an entertainer, just like we have Beyonce and others and Tina Turner. Well, the predecessor to both of those wonderful, spirited entertainers was Josephine Baker. She left the United States. She resided in France, ended up adopting many children, was a great humanitarian, but never forgot the ills of her own birth country. I think she was born in St. Louis or from that area, and the stings of that, and the fact that she could not really perform as an entertainer in her own country because diversity and because racism and discrimination was so rampant during the 20s and 30s and 40s. So she's a 60-year-old woman. She has been invited to speak at the 1963 March on Washington, but I think her comments are so relevant to today. She wanted to see a multicultural society, and she was so anxious to have it happen as a result of this march. So I just want to give you the flavor of that era 50 years ago with Josephine Baker. Here you go.
And now, to show the international character of the struggle in which we are currently engaged, I would like to introduce to you a person who, though far in residence from our shores, has come all the way from her home to be with us today, Miss Josephine Baker.
I want you to know that this is the happiest day of my entire life. And As you all must know, I have had a very long life, and I'm 60 years old. The results today of seeing you all together is a sight for sore eyes. You're together as salt and pepper, just as you should be. Just as I've always wanted you to be, and peoples of the world have always wanted you to be. You are a united people, at last, because without unity, there cannot be any victory. I'm glad that in my homeland, where I was born and love and respect, I'm glad to see this day come to pass. This day, because you are on the eve of complete victory. And tomorrow, time will do the rest. I want you to know also how proud I am to be here today. And after so many long years of struggle, fighting here and elsewhere for your rights, our rights, the rights of humanity, the rights of man. I'm glad that you have accepted me to come. I didn't ask you, I didn't have to. I just came because it was my duty. And I'm going to say again, you are on the eve of complete victory. You continue on. You can't go wrong. The world is behind you.
What really strikes me about that, it's the noise that you heard in the background, that was applause. So that's just how it's translated technologically. So, but just two comments. She talked about you, without unity, you cannot have victory. And then she talked about it's beautiful to see you out there, just like salt and pepper. I'm just struck by probably what she was seeing based on the vision that she had of her homeland here in the United States, and what it must have been like to see that sea of 250,000 people all working for one cause. High props to A. Philip Randolph during that time. He was the orchestrator, the main orchestrator of that march, and Byron Rustin, who was his mentee, who also strategically put an awful lot of work and time and effort into the march. There were many hands that really put it together. But the whole focal point was moving from a point of segregation and separation to a greater move of moving toward unity so that full diversity would be in play. So I'm going to bring my guest on now, Bill Wells, who is a longtime friend, diversity professional, also the immediate past chair of the National Black MBA Association, has been in the field for many, many years. And Bill, you're in Minneapolis. What are you seeing in terms of the landscape when you compare the days of 1963? I talked last week about how significant 1863 is, 150 years ago, to what's going on today. What are you seeing, Bill, in your walk of life with the work that you're doing in diversity and that buzzword now, inclusion?
Okay. Well, first of all, let me thank you so much, Carol, for the invitation to be with you today and all those who are dialed in this afternoon. I welcome each and every person. One thing I need to make clear, we've got a fairly short period of time, and we are not going to solve world hunger in today's conversation, but hopefully we'll get some key issues put on the table, and I think it's very, very important for us to have a continuing dialogue and discussion. Now,
right.
let me use as a a reference point the activities this week, the 50th anniversary of Dr. Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech, all the acknowledgments, the president's address yesterday, which was phenomenal, all those things, John Lewis, all the many people who have been speaking to that. And what I believe Dr. King was speaking to was the ideal state. We do know that there has been progress made and it's been acknowledged. And I'm kind of reminded of the phrase, you know, like all boats rise when the tide comes in. The challenge is, though, there has been progress made, absolutely, and particularly if we address it from African-American perspective or people of color, there has been progress made. The disparity, though, in the level of progress is what's really more at issue. Everybody has made progress in living, but there are continued gaps in education, employment, that are far more striking among people of color and in the urban settings that really aren't much different than they were 50 years ago when Dr. King gave a speech. But that's a whole nother discussion path. Let me just respond to part of what you asked. Yes, I'm here in Minneapolis. For those of you who don't know, though, Minneapolis is really the hub for probably having, on a per capita basis, probably one of the highest percentages of cities, urban cities, that has a large number of Fortune 500 companies. Or for those of you who watch the Standard & Poor 1000 listing, we have like 31 companies located right here in Minneapolis, all the way from the General Mills to the 3Ms to the Ameriprise Financial to SuperValue, on and on, Target, Best Buy. So we've got retail, manufacturing, insurance, a wide variation. So what I see here, though, is probably, I would say, more reflection of the Midwest demographic. And we have to be careful because, you know, we oftentimes hear companies talk about wanting to have a workforce that's more reflective of the marketplace or the local demographic. Right. Well, right. That happens, and it can happen differently all over the country. If you're on the West Coast versus the East Coast versus the Northwest versus the Southeast, Midwest, what have you. So that's an impact that I think we've got to be a little careful when we talk about, you know, what does it look like geographically, and have we reached that ideal state? Hopefully, and the other thing I was thinking about as we talk about diversity on your job and what you see and how does it look, we've got to be careful, but when we talk about the workplace, and the reason I say that, Carol, is there is no ubiquitous workplace one size fits all. We have call centers. We have, you know, call centers are the airlines and financial services, credit card companies, travel agencies, all have call centers. And I don't know your experience, but I've called a number of times recently, and the thing that I probably am most profoundly struck with is the challenge with language and communication. Because we have a lot more immigrants in the country today that are on the job than I believe, you know, were evident when Dr. King gave his speech. So right. That's one. If you look at law offices, the legal industry, what does that typical workplace look like? Highly professional, much, much different. You go to a warehouse. Warehouse has a lot of skilled, I mean, a lot of hourly workers. And I know because I've worked as a consultant in some of those environments, and the lower-ranking people tend to be people of color. All the supervisors are not of color. And huge, huge gaps in disparity, culture, race, ethnicity, language, religion, the whole thing. Then if we look at our retail outlets, you know, the Walmarts, the Best Buy, Target, companies in the malls, those workplaces look a lot different because they're dealing with heavy transactions. You've got a lot of sales clerks. Then we get to corporate offices. The point I'm trying to make is, it's hard to really say that the workplace has become so diversified all across the board that we're able to apply certain, you know, certain solutions, if you will, certain diversity and inclusion solutions, because it varies by organization. It could be a large company, a medium-sized, small, public sector, can be a B2B, B2C, all over the place.
You know, you mentioned factories. I'm going to use that as a point of example. And you gave a wonderful portrayal profile of the types of companies and organizations that are in our workplace. The one thing you mentioned that I'm sort of picking up on and seeing in terms of a pattern are, let's say, in factory or manufacturing settings where so often you see a great landscape of diversity and demographics and ethnicities on the lower levels. But when it comes to senior management and key leadership positions, that's where there's a narrowing of the gap, and you don't see as much diversity. And I can play that out in hospital settings because I work a lot in healthcare, see that all the time where you've got, you know, these huge institutions that are run by just a sea of people. But when it comes to the hospital administrators, they're few and far between. My cousin is a former hospital president, and many times she was the only woman of color in those rooms. And so what I'm, I guess, picking up on are the, regardless of what kind of discipline or organization you're talking about, so often, yes, we see diversity in mass on the lower levels, but on the senior levels, that's where the struggle still remains.
Yes, absolutely. And so, you know, let's think about what was it that Dr. King said? He talked about equality for all mankind,
right,
and to be judged by the character, the content of your character, not by the color of your skin. If that were the case, and if people perceived that all people had native raw intelligence and had abilities and skills and capabilities, then I'd have, think we'd have more level setting. But that's obvious not the
correct
case. We do know, and I
correct
hate to go there, but racism still exists, sexism exists, homophobiaism exists, ageism exists, and those still are significant barriers and impacts in the workplace, particularly when it comes
right
to race and color.
Right, right.
Particularly when it
comes
to race and color.
And what happens so often is, again, when it's, you know, the eyes of the beholder, the eyes, whatever lens or perspective you're looking at, that happens to be your world. You and I work across the country. We deal with lots of companies, lots of organizations, so we have a chance to see a bigger picture. But for some people, where the American dream has really worked very well for them, then they so often can say, well, you know, I pulled myself up from my bootstraps. It's all working for me. I don't know why it can't work for those people. And those people may be individuals where there are educational barriers, where there's just all kind of issues that have hit them in terms of urban barriers that have played itself out in terms of where they see themselves and the leadership roles that they see themselves in.
Yes, that's correct. You know, I'm reminded of a situation that, and I see this play out all the time, and it's all over the country. There are a lot of companies that are relative startups. Maybe they're 25 to 50 years old. They're not the you know, long-time giants like the automotive industry and what have you. And what I've seen is in many cases, you see people that graduate from high school, go to work for these companies, and literally stay there for their entire career. And not all, obviously, but any number of them can wind up in the C-suite. And I've seen it happen. Some of them are my clients. And they're good people. But then I look at people of color coming in who have literally, they reach a point and they literally have to leave that company to go somewhere else to continue their career because it's not the same career pathing. And it's interesting to watch the surprise on the part of those who came in that often, and there are cases, people at the C-suite don't even have a degree. And people of color are coming in with their degree and maybe an MBA or a master's degree. I mean, it's this kind of the getting overqualified almost. But we realize that sometimes it takes having extra credentials to even match up on a competitive level with your folks that don't look like you. And that's just a reality.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, you are long-term history with the Black MBA Association. You are the immediate past chair of that illustrious organization. You and I go way back in that organization, and you certainly have worked with and seen many, many companies. What's the conversation point? What is the buzz in terms of the companies that have passed through the Black MBA Association and those that you see in terms of the talent that they're currently looking for in their companies?
Right. Well, there's a distinction. There's the C-suite conversation, and then there's conversation that happens at the HR practitioner level. And it could even be the senior VP or the EVP of HR. The reason I say that is I have, throughout my time, and the Black MBA Association has afforded me tremendous opportunities to exposure at a broad number of CEOs all over the country, and particularly here in the Twin Cities. And what happens is, if it really gets down to it, and I've had this conversation, and I've challenged them, I've asked the CEOs before, to what extent do you and your colleagues, meaning at this level, have discussions around diversity and inclusion? And I've oftentimes been met with blank stares, and the comment oftentimes has been, never. What they are talking about typically, what they typically talk about in their meetings, their quarterly results, because you got to remember, CEOs report to the board reports to Wall Street, and it's all about the numbers. It's all about the numbers. The challenge that we have as HR and diversity practitioners is to help them understand the business case and why it's important to have a diverse workforce that drives innovation, drives creativity, and drives all the things that we've known for how long. You know, but if they can't see it in hard numbers, with facts and data, they then don't have that conversation. It's not a conversation they're comfortable with. Yeah, that's something. Now, you mentioned something about pulling yourself up by your bootstraps, and this is a real fact. This was a study done very recently, showed up in the Minneapolis newspaper, and apparently Minnesota got rated as one of the better states for having a high percentage of people that are able to migrate their status out of a poverty condition into mainstream America. So the article is reading really fine, and I'm looking at it and saying, really, is this where I live? And then it gets down, and then the footnote says, with the exception of people of color, this is the way it works. This is a study. Well, this is a broad, heavily researched study that shows that people can, in fact, move out of poverty. But when it comes to people of color, particularly African-American, Hispanic, Latino, that was not the same condition.
And just that mere study, you validated what I've said, that if you fall in that category where whatever your circumstances happen to be educationally or in terms of your income, you pull yourself up, you move from point A to point B in a company or another company, and you find yourself in a senior role, then the assumption is if you did it, everybody else can do it. And practitioners have to constantly remind people is that that's not always the case. Obviously, that's the ideal. That's where you want people to be. But there are large segments of the population, in the case people of color, where there may be obstacles still in place that prevent them from moving up at the same level. And that's where that's the gap, and that's the sticky point that makes this work so important, and really we need to move forward. So what advice, very quickly, that you would give to someone who is a real diversity champion, they really advocate for the cause, they are well-qualified, well beyond that point, but for whatever reason, their company isn't quite there yet, and there are a lot of companies like that, too. Or the company is really in the infancy in terms of diversity and this buzzword and full disclosure, even though I've been in this business for 26 years and I have to keep up with the times, I'm troubled with the word inclusion because of the fact that there's so many issues related to race that you just alluded to that if we pull so far away with new words, we really won't get to the base level that we really need in this company, this country, to really move ahead. But what advice would you give to that person who is sort of hitting a brick wall with the company that they're working in, and diversity isn't quite what it should be?
Right. Well, okay, and I I'm going to base this on my experience and my experience as a former chief diversity officer at a Fortune 200 company, along with the myriad of client organizations that I work with, a lot of Fortune 500, public sector, nonprofit sector, all over the country. I haven't worked much outside of this country, but I have interviewed people all over the world. So what I would suggest, and this is the approach that I take, and it works for me and it may not work for others, but I've given this speech many times, and you and I have been together at the Multicultural Forum when I've delivered it. Now, I usually get pretty strong traction, and that is you have to start at the top. If you don't get clarity around an understanding of what the issue is at the very top of the organization, it doesn't matter. It's kind of like if you don't know where you're going, any road will get you there. And if you are not able to perhaps hear from the chairman, the CEO, somebody at the very senior level has to help you understand what it is about the human capital component of that organization that really needs to be addressed. So, I start at the top because everything gets set there. The top leaders helps establish the vision for the organization and the future direction.
Exactly.
So without getting that, people, and I've run into this all the time, people say, well, our leaders just don't get it. Well, if they don't get it, perhaps a couple things. One, maybe they don't get it, but I would also suggest is perhaps as an HR or diversity professional, you haven't delivered the right message to get their attention. It's simple to me. It's about people, performance, and profit. That's the magic formula in corporate America. Now, yeah, I know there's products and services, but at the end of the day, people constitute and salaries constitute the highest proportion on a P&L of any company. So if you think about the investment that they've made in people, and where does creativity and imagination and innovativeness come from? It comes from people. So people are looking how to be engaged. They're not looking how to be included. That's a given. But they're looking, how can I be effectively engaged, be a contributor to the success of this business, and provide you with the skills and competencies, the very reason you hired me? Because you really didn't hire me just because of my color.
Right.
So again,
and the big key here, and again, we're going to continue this conversation in the weeks and months to come because I've already asked you to be a recurring guest. Mary Frances Winters is a recurring guest. This is such an important topic. We have many people in the chat room. They're listening very intently. We have people on the phone who are listening as well. This is, I think, one of the biggest challenges that we have, and you have really struck a nerve here because the key point is to make sure that we're getting our points across to the decision makers, and those decision makers are in the C-suite, they're in executive director roles, whatever the leadership position happens to be, but if they can understand the value, the financial, the economic value of diversity, multiculturalism, et cetera, and it becomes embedded in everything that that company does and how they operate regardless of how they reorganize, then that's where real change can take place. And that is where the stumbling block is because there's a lot of lip service, I think, that's going on in these companies because a lot of these men and women are very focused on the bottom line. Obviously, they've got to report to their board of directors, et cetera. And so diversity is perceived as a specialty program, something that is special or an add-on instead of being an energy or a force that can really elevate them to a higher level of productivity. Bill, we're going to talk about this for a long, long time.
Okay, I'll save the point that I was going to make until later then.
Thank you so much. But Bill, tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you.
Oh, okay, very good. I'll do two things. I don't have a blog right now, but I'll give you my email address, and it's simple. It's B Wells 2, just B-W-E-L-L-S, and the number 2 at MSN.com. MSN, M as in Mary, S as in Sam, N as in Nancy.com. I'll also leave you my office number. It's 952-942-0654. I'd love to hear from anyone that has something to add to this conversation. Because as you and I have both stated, Carol, as much as I've known about this field, I seem to learn more and more every day. It's changing, and it's really becoming even much more complex than ever.
Very much so. Bill Wells, thank you so much for being a guest on my program, former board chair of the National Black MBA Association, longtime diversity professional working in corporations and certainly in an executive capacity on your own. We're going to have you back on, definitely, because this is an important issue. Just as listening, seeing how the chat room has filled up and people who are certainly attentively listening, these kind of questions are, I think, the core questions about how our country will move ahead, or if it will move ahead, where it needs to go from a global perspective. So we're going to bring this up over and over again. I think it is very essential. Thanks so much, my guest today, and those of you who have listened. And shoot your questions over to me at tellcarole, TELLCAROLE, at mac.com. We'll talk to you next week. Thank you so much. Have a great week or weekend, Labor Day weekend. We'll see you next week.